You're listening to the Slow Ride Podcast. Bikes, advice, and rumors straight from the source. TheSlowRidePodcast.com and on Twitter at TheSlowRidePod. Enjoy the ride.
Buongiorno, and welcome to the Slow Ride Podcast, episode 476. This is Tim in Orlando, Florida.
Tim, did you say DiGiorno or Buongiorno? This is Matt in Minneapolis.
Fight through it, Spencer. Fight through it. Let's go.
I'm trying. I can't think of another pasta brand to come up. Anyway, this is Spencer in Holyoke, Massachusetts. Boy, that just threw off my whole game.
It's Milan San Remo week.
Milan,
yeah. I was here for you.
Yep, it was. Yeah.
You know, bike racing season's here when the email box is overflowing. And it's bike racing season in Milan San Remo for 6.5 hours, our favorite race where you get to go for a bike ride, come home, and there's still 50K to go.
Yeah.
And so easy to find the coverage on the Max app. It was awesome. Just turned it on.
Was it? Actually,
so much stuff here.
Teach me because I don't know. I watched the race in highlights because I didn't want to give Max my money. So how is the Max app?
It was awesome. Can we also give a shout out to Team Pulte Cometa for having three people in the break for almost the entire race?
That was
awesome.
Yeah.
Get those folks on the start line for the Giro. So much to get to. Let's get right into it. Bling Matthews, ring one out. If it wasn't for his sunglasses, for sure Bling Matthews would have won a monument. And our European correspondent would be calling us live for an interview post Milan San Remo from the Villa Roma. So awesome.
So close. So close.
So Team Denham takes the win, Jasper Philipsen over Michael Matthews and Tadej Pogacar in by far the greatest bro fest of all time on the podium.
Love fest on the podium. Isn't that great?
Can I just say, I hate to do this, but I kind of agree with Lance Armstrong. I don't need to see a ton of hugs.
Really?
I want to see... I don't want people to be celebrating together. What are you talking about?
But these guys...
I want to see anger and detest of one another the way that Lance showed for everybody. Lance, our North Star of cycling.
Lance would have... That's even more terrible of Lance because, like, Pog and Philipsen were former teammates and have known buddies.
Yes.
Having been teammates before. And then Bling and Pog are, like... best buds. They rode to the race together. It was awesome to see them celebrating the win.
I know.
They're like normal people. They have to bum rides to races. Bling, you know why Bling, Tim, you know why Bling had a bummer ride to the race? He's a Subaru guy. Probably blew a head gasket. Couldn't drive himself. He had to get a ride from Pogue to the race.
So for those of you that were not listening to the Green Room, there was a solid 15-minute discussion where these clowns told me that there's a head gasket problem that might be happening to my 2017 Subaru Outback, but I don't believe them. I want to get back to the point of this and say that Michael Matthews did a hell of a job.
Yeah, he did.
Tadej Pogacar looked great.
Yeah.
Matthew Vanderpoel was resplendent in the white bibs. My son even noticed he was wearing the white bibs. Says, "Dad, why is the guy in the rainbow jersey wearing white bibs?" And I was like, I'm pretty much done being a father at this point. I've been successful. He pointed it out on the Poggio.
And what did you say? Because he can. Because when you're the rainbow jersey holder, you can make that choice.
You can wear whatever you want, son.
For maximum distraction. For maximum tricking other teams to watch him when he was going to lead out his teammate the whole time.
It was so awesome.
It was good
to see today. And I was a little shocked that Philipsen took the win.
Really?
Wasn't on my list. I had Mads Pedersen. Remember, I claimed Mads Pedersen was going to win. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, did not. Did have a great lead out from Stuyven. But at the end of the day, it was Philipsen with a bike throw over Michael Matthews, who, seriously, Michael Matthews, why are the sunglasses coming off?
I don't know, man. I don't think that's what cost him the win. I mean, Philipsen is the best sprinter.
You don't think so?
Philipsen is
you don't think the distraction?
Philipsen is the fastest sprinter in the world right now, like the last year.
You trying to tell me that the distraction of the sunglasses falling off?
I don't think
it was helped. Less than a quarter of a tire.
Yeah, I don't think it helped, but I mean, having Philipsen be as good as he is also doesn't help. I mean, Philipsen, let's not forget, Philipsen got second at Roubaix last year. Like, the guy's no slouch when it comes to classics racing at this point. Like, he's not just a sprinter anymore. He added at least a zero to his next contract with this win.
I mean,
like, it's a contract year. Like,
certainly.
A zero just appeared on his next paycheck. Like, boom.
So a break of, 10 kind of controlled the race for a while. Then they get to the foot of the Chipressa. Pogacar does not go, kind of pinned in. But Pogacar goes, like, on the Poggio, if I recall correctly, right? Like, definitely puts an attack in. And only Matthew Vanderpoel, Bettiol, and Pedersen are able to really stick with it. Wasn't the crazy descent that we were all hoping from the Poggio. Still a good-looking descent.
It was good. But I mean, Pidcock dragged everybody
up being
back
a sprint
on it. So.
Yeah.
First over the Poggio, shout out to Roller Derby and our dear friend Luke. For the hiatus Roller Derby, it was UAE first over the Poggio line, one of our favorite things. And it did, in fact, end in what would be considered a break, because in the old Roller Derby break, it was 12 or less riders finishing 15 seconds away from the peloton, and it was 12 riders exact finishing 35 seconds away from the field. Overall, great race. I loved watching the final 35K, as always.
Yeah,
it is a great race. And, you know, I think Team Jayco, the Soigneurs, deserve a shout out there, because as you've mentioned, Michael Matthews losing the glasses in the sprint, losing the race due to the glasses in the sprint, but on the podium, brand new set of glasses.
It's true.
They weren't going to let that go. They were there. They were ready. They were prepared. They got them set up for the photos, for the photographers, for the shining lights. And that's what you love to see.
I did see video of Vanderpoel wearing black bibs after the race.
That was to cool ride, down, back, yeah. ride back to yeah. wherever he lives, right?
Now, it was the fastest Milan-San Remo of all time, I believe. It's still at 6 hours and 14 minutes.
Yeah.
With an average speed of 46 kilometers an hour. Now I'm going to do some quick podcast math. 46 kilometer hour to MPH. That is an average speed of 28 miles per hour. Peak Tim could last maybe about 10 miles.
10?
Wow. Very ambitious. Very ambitious.
Wow.
At 28 miles an hour, yeah. I think you got to remember, guys, there's like over 180 starters. Like,
I don't know. I was wondering if you were even going to count that in minutes.
I mean, I was saying, how many Cat 1-2 crits did you last an hour in? I mean, I know there was more corners, but I mean, that would have been...
That's like a lot more corners. Like that's the thing. That's the thing. It's here, the corners.
You know? Yeah, the corners would have got you.
Yeah, it would require Tim entering Cat 1-2 crits.
Yeah, that's true.
So here we are. Overall, on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you rate Milan-San Remo, Spencer?
I rate it highly. I think this race was really good. I think there was a lot of fun attacks. Unfortunately, no Scarponi Bridge, as you mentioned. Pogue kind of boxed in. But I thought I had all the action you want. Great weather, great results, a fun nail-biting kind of finish, which you love to see. the white shorts, kind of weird. I mean, we're in a new era, right, of Milan San Remo, because it used to be who showed up in leg warmers versus who didn't. And it's like a training ride with a couple guys that go for it at the end. And now it is full on, like, everybody going for it. Like, they treat it like a legitimate, like, goal for the season. Because, you know, hey, if it's going to be a monument and you can add that zero to your paycheck, you probably should take it seriously. And, you know, I love to see it. Look, Milan San Remo is rising in my personal ranks. Like, I always love it. I love the last, like, 10, 20K. But the whole race overall is kind of low on my list. But it's coming up. I'm going to give this edition 8.5 out of 10. I think it had everything we want and a fun result.
Well, to get higher than 8.5, you would have had to have a Michael Matthews win. I'm going to just give it a solid 8. It was a fun race to watch, but not the best Milan San Remo I've ever seen. Little guy, go ahead.
I'll rank right between you, 8.25. Solid, super fun. Anytime you got a tour champion and a green jersey and two former green jersey winners dueling it out. I mean, like, it's a fun group. Like, look at that top 12 rider group. Like, man, you got all big hitters, and you got kind of two underdogs in there with Maxim Van Gils, who's been having a huge year for a lot of Dynasty, and then what's his name, Sobrero, who took a little flyer, like giving hope to Italy, like the total underdog guy to make that move, and then taking the flyer there toward the end. Like, you knew it wasn't going to happen, but you got to admit, like, it was a good look for Italy to have that, like, sneaky guy in there who could maybe make them all look at each other. Like, it was fun. It was good. Tim's boy Alaphilippe there. I mean, nobody saw that he was there until when they saw the results later.
A solid ninth place finish.
Yeah.
So
good stuff, man.
It was a 16th place goes to Casper Asgreen of Sudal Quickstep. How do you feel about that, little guy?
Yeah, good for him. He's a guy I forget that's a monument winner and. I think he crashed earlier in the year, and hopefully he's got some good form because it's fun in the classics.
Speaking of 16th place, I did get a text message this week. It comes to us from Winter Park Cycles, and someone had commented on, I don't know if you know, Drew Dillman, the cyclocross racer, and it said, Gat Molson. So Gat Molson, if you're around, it says the Slow Ride Cycling Podcast always says 16th place is a sign of forthcoming greatness. Love the mix of titles and voiceover on this video, and congrats to beating a four Tour de France champion. Great. And then Drew comments, thanks. I hope they're right about 16th place. So you're welcome, but Gat, thanks for giving us the shout out. 16th place is definitely an important, important place. And it looks like Dillman got 16th at Belgian Waffle Ride.
To be correct. So Drew rest assured. We have data, years of data to back this up.
Yes.
Now, Dillman has gotten several Belgian Waffle Rides top 10s, but got 16th at Arizona this year. So yes, it's a sign of greatness to come for sure. But many thanks for sharing that one with us. Overall, I loved it. And in the spirit of Italy, let's continue on the women's side. Of course, we have the 25th Alfredo Binda Trophy Race, one of the largest one-day classics on the women's scene, the same weekend as Milan San Remo every year. And Elisa Balsamo takes the win for a little trek over Lotta Capecchi and Puck Pirtis of Phoenix de Kernik in third, with 16th place going to Ricardo Bauerfiend of Canyon Shram. Great to see you all around. Either of you able to watch the Trophy Alpha Binda this week?
No.
But I will go watch. I will go back and watch the highlights. Do we give Capecchi the belt? Is that the thing?
Right? Oh, that's. I should check. What I do like about this race is that Capecchi does have the belt. Okay. I do like the circuit style racing, nonstop hits. I do think that circuits should be something that has a little bit more prevalence in the road racing scene. As cool as Milan San Remo is, it is a bit of a death march with just one big climb halfway. Whereas if you had like consistent, like a world championship road race is awesome. And Binda every single year with the circuits is just constant action. And I think that that is something that, you know, maybe the men can learn a thing or two.
Yeah. I mean, that's always a good thing about the Canadian races. Mm-hmm. Montreal and stuff. Those circuits are super fun to watch. You're right.
They are for sure. But yeah. So overall, great race, great weekend of racing in Italy. Ciao. I don't know. What do you say? Like, good job, Wunderbar, in Italian.
Yeah. You say on to Belgium because now it's. Yeah. Now we're into the meat of the Northern Classics here for the next 2 weeks.
I did have a great week of travel for work, and I did get to see Spencer, a little guy, on Thursday and Friday. I want to tell you that I saw the van again. I was worried. I needed to get proof of life.
Yeah.
The Vanagon, okay. I don't know if it's alive, but the Vanagon is behind. I will put the post on Instagram. The Vanagon is there. It is in a garage, and it looks like little guy's ping pong table, just full of storage and boxes. There's a random door open on it, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds.
The house looks great. The Vanagon, not so much. But on that trip, I also got to go see friends of the pod, Brian and Patrick at JRA. Forgot how much I love that shop in Boston. I put a post up on my old Instagram about seeing JRA. And I had three separate bike shop friends of mine all going, that may be the best name ever for a bike shop. And they're all like, they all come up from being mechanics, just having a JRA bike shop name. Mm-hmm. We've talked about it before. It's brilliant. I think there's like two of them. There was three at one point, but I think one just closed in California. So I think we're down to two JRAs. One of the best things ever. For those that don't know, it is the classic, like, I was just riding around and my bike broke. I'm just riding along. And then the bike broke. I didn't do anything. The wheel exploded. I didn't try fixing it. Are you kidding? I was just riding along, man. Love it. One of my favorites.
Frame cracked in half. I was just riding.
Now, Spencer, your week was going pretty crappy. Until you saw these pearly whites roll up into Western Mass.
Yeah, in the dumps until old Tim showed up to pull me up.
Let's go ride bikes. That's right. Let's go ride some bikes, and we didn't.
No.
So you did show me a dome home in Western Mass there. That was awesome. On top of a solid hill outside of your house. You could have easily gotten Everest.
Mere blocks away from the house. Yeah.
If you had the determination.
There's some elevation out here. So I am jonesing to do the Everest challenge again with you guys.
Because
I can just stay in the neighborhood.
So that was awesome. Boston was great. But I gotta steal a little bit of thunder here, boys. I went to Shangri-La. I went to Bentonville, Arkansas, and as much as I hate to admit it, the amount of cyclists that I saw in Bentonville, Arkansas, with the mountain bike trails was next level. The hype is real. I'm just going to say that. I don't want to admit it, but oh my God, Bentonville, like everywhere I looked, there was Groms on full suspension bikes. Granted, it was spring break. Every bike shop I walked into had 10 to 15 people walking through. I was in there. I saw friend of the pod, Johnny Sun, just randomly comes into the Meteor. Spencer, you've known Johnny forever, but
oh yeah,
we were just slinging Nature Valley Grand Prix stories left and right. This guy's a legend. And here he is, like, just hanging out. And he had a special delivery that I had to give you, Spencer.
Yeah.
And what was it? Do you remember what? What was it?
The very sweet bottles. I appreciate it. Well, I was told there were bottles. I only got one.
You only got one because I stole one. But yes, it was a Legion of LA bottle. Now, I have mine in the back of my trophy case. Now, Johnny was leading, I believe it was the Austin Aviators.
Okay.
Unless it was a different Austin Outlaws. I don't know. They change their names every like week.
I don't think that's
right. But he had a Legion. And then Johnny hooked me up with some Time pedals, boys. It was amazing. Whoa, it was like right. Santa Claus coming. I hadn't seen, I mean, Johnny's son, legend of Flow TV. Little guy asked for your refund. He had nothing to do with it. But
I don't blame Johnny.
I had so much fun seeing Johnny. And then at the same time, Johnny introduced me to a couple of other people. So met Andy and Shelby, friend of the pod, multi-time listeners to the pod. First-time emailers later today. Because they gave me a drinking game that I was like, that is a conversation for the podcast. So I think we should just get into that right away. Do you guys want to hear what Andy and Shelby had come up with?
Yeah.
So
greetings. Yeah, that. I do want to say that's a really nice like USA Cycling cap you've got on there, Tim. And polo, it looks like, as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Got a lot of gear, actually.
Just a fanboy.
Hang on.
I'm not on the take. I'm basically Spencer for
interesting.
I'm basically Spencer for Legion. I have become Bentonville's biggest champion. I was shocked. The meteor was really cool. That Dylan and Bavier, they were really cool to hang out. I mean, anyways, really awesome. Before I get to this email from Andy and Shelby, there's a Strider store in downtown. Bentonville, right next to the Walmart Museum, but the Walmart Museum has been torn down. Apparently, they destroyed the historic building.
Did
it's
they
not
build
there anymore,
a bigger
so
museum across town and put it out of business?
Out in the suburbs.
So, but there's a Strider store, and I got to tell you, they had a tandem Strider, and then they had a Strider. Cool. They had a Strider that had carbon hoops. At least I thought it was carbon hoops. Many people on a Slow Ride Podcast Instagram account have pointed out that they were not carbon, that they're just a wrap. But the bike was for $420.99. Spencer, did they miss a better pricing opportunity?
They really did. Anytime you could price something at $420.69, nice. You got to put a big, nice sticker on there and go for it. I mean, the 30 cents at the end of the day?
So inside the Strider store, tons of like ways to customize your Strider, different color grips, wherever. There's at least 50 Striders in there. And then half the store was a toy store. Like basically a Five and Dime that you would expect to be Walton's Five and Dime.
This is like what BMX stores used to be like in the 90s. It was just like $400 bikes that you could like switch out the grips and pedals and customize a little bit. And then the rest of it was just fun stuff to buy.
It was really, really cool store to see. And they had a little like trial section. So your kid can go rip around in the Striders. Very unique, very cool to see. All right, let's get to the email. So greetings, Slow Ride Pod. This subject line is Podium Chugs. I'm writing to you from the parking lot at Mid-South. Okay. We had an accident. Oh, Mid-South. Real quick, I have not checked for results for Mid-South. Have either of you?
No.
No, and I won't.
Okay, you guys vamp. You guys vamp. I'm going to see how long it takes me to find the results. Mid-South results.
So Mid-South, so that's like Mankato, you think?
No, that's in Oklahoma. Keep going. No, keep going.
Little guy, the world is bigger than Minnesota.
Really?
So,
are you serious? Yeah. Really?
I am. Yeah, but if you took 35 straight down, I think you'd hit it.
I think you hit everything if you take 35.
Keep going, keep
down.
Going. I'm
I was in Austin,
I think I'm almost
one
there.
Time and I was like next to 35 and I was like, I could take this one, I could get on this a block away and then go four blocks and be at my house. It's insane.
Make no more turns and get home. Yeah. No,
the got him. Got the results.
Hey, all right.
Let's give
go Eisenhower.
That's about 40 seconds, Tim.
Yeah, not too bad. 100 the 100 mile was won by Torben Andre Rode of Grand Junction over Griffin Easter and John Borstelman. Congrats to them. Let's see how long it's going to take to find the women's race here. This is great radio, but surprisingly quick to find the results. This is an improvement. I think that we are seeing overall improvement for this gravel racing. Laura DiCrenzo takes the win over Jenna Reinhart of Minnesota. Ooh. And Carolyn Rezin. First, second, third. Jenna Reinhart, yeah, who's destroyed all three of us multiple times in mountain bike races, with a solid second place. That is fantastic to see. All right, so back to the email. Writing to you from the parking lot at Mid-South, we had an excellent day on the bike. Watched the finale of Milan Sanremo while we rode. Matthew Vanderpoel, the best leadout man alive, and I'll die on this hill. Not too bad. And now I must tell you about a new game we've been workshopping for you and your listeners to bring to your next cycling event. The rules are simple, but the possibility for inebriation is high. When the podium ceremony begins, be sure to have your favorite beverage or two or six nearby. I give you podium chugs. If someone is wearing a helmet on the podium, take a drink.
Okay.
If someone that did not win puts both hands in the air, take a drink. Of course,
we're all getting hands. Smashed. Oh, no.
Getting smashed. If someone wears a road jersey with anything but road shirts or road shorts, take a drink. So this is the old, oh, wait, actually, there's a sub caveat here. If they're in cargo shorts, take two drinks.
Oh, man.
The old dad shorts. Love it. If someone wears open-toed shoes or Crocs, except EF Crocs, take a drink.
That one's going to be brutal,
and
too.
We've been workshopping a wide-angle podium rule, but think you all need to set some terms on that one. So if it's a wide-angle podium, five wide, also take a drink. And for the finale, the podium bike. From the time the podium bike is set in place to the time it is taken away, you have to chug. We'll be sure to test this out at the award ceremony at Milan at Mid-South and report back. Thank you for the hours and hours of entertainment. And as always, be sure to wave to your fellow riders, Andy and Shelby from Bentonville. And we'll tell you about the Slow Ride Pod drinking game another time. Now,
last one is going to require a keg. Like,
What do you think would be the Slow Ride Podcast drinking game?
Mispronunciations when we say Lisa Bike Jumbo. Those are things.
Anytime Tim talks about his messenger days,
Peak
the
Tim,
glory days,
Peak Tim, yeah.
Peak Tim.
Do we talk about how good Alejandro Pataki, Valverde?
Yeah, Valverde.
Valverde.
Virgin Cappy.
Yeah. Basically the same podcast for us. Like
Everest again, but
years.
Doesn't set any dates. I'd say those sorts of things.
That's weird. It's like the challenge is out there, but you guys just don't accept it.
So, great stuff. Thank you from the report for Mid-South. But let's get to our very own European correspondent. Of course, I'm talking about the return of Michael Matthews. Second place finish at Milan Sanremo. Hired back to the Slow Ride Podcast in this week's Cream Lap.
I'm Heinrich Hausler, and you're listening to the Slow Ride Podcast.
All right, guys, here we are. The contract has not been signed by Michael Matthews, unfortunately.
Yeah. Turns out he added another zero to the end of the number. It's crazy.
Man.
We are back for another Prem Lap. Want to thank all the listeners and supporters of the Wide Angle Podium Network. Head over to wideanglepodium.com to find out about the family of shows, including Cyclocross Radio, Grodio, Nowhere Fast, and, of course, Cyclocross Radio.
Criterium Nation.
Criterium Nation. Rob's always out there killing it. Always great to see. So head over to wideanglepodium.com and find out how you can become a member and a supporter of independent cycling media.
Mm-hmm. And with enough support, it allows us to keep doing this show for all the other shows to keep doing their show and potentially to bring in new shows, more exciting shows, experiment a little bit, have some fun. Maybe there's a Nordic Corner coming. Who knows? I don't know.
No more.
You guys are
going
to have to support the have to support the network to make this kind of stuff happen, and we appreciate it. So thank you very much. We also have to pay for some sunglasses to send Michael Matthews another pair. Apparently, that's part of the rider on his new contract.
Yes,
in addition to the zero,
important part of the rider. Well, boys, let's get back to the podcast. The email bag is overflowing.
name is Matthew Vanderpool, and I don't listen to the Slow Ride podcast.
Oh, we're back to the show. Let's rip open the bag. You can always email us at theslowridepodcast@gmail.com, where all of your emails are gratefully received. We love it when you send them in. Cross bike build suggestions. This one comes to us from the leading edge of Iowa. Of course, I'm talking about Todd Grassman. Hello, Slow Riders. This May, I graduate from nursing school, and as a gift to myself, I'm ordering a custom aluminum Rock Lobster World Cup cross frame. The wait list is almost a year, so I have a while to contemplate the build. Gentlemen, give me your thoughts on what parts I should adorn this delightful frame with. I imagine each of you will have your own unique take. As far as the frame paint job, I really love the seafoam green, which Rock Lobster uses frequently.
Correct. Yeah,
so that is my current plan.
Yeah.
Though I could be swayed to a different color. What accent color would you propose to go with the seafoam green? Thank you for the many years of cycling nerd conversations. It is truly a highlight of my week. It has been for a better part of a decade now. And little guy Todd will be quick to point out that you still have yet to post photos of his pain cave featuring the MXPX. So it is coming. Todd, we come. So can we all three of us agree that if you're getting a Rock Lobster, it must be the seafoam green? Can we like agree to that?
It doesn't have to be, but I think that's the best choice.
It's
yeah.
good.
It's 100% really the best. Okay.
I think color. Can all three of us agree that if your pain cave has not been posted to Instagram yet, you should email the slowridepodcast@gmail.com and harass little guy into posting it.
Todd, I'm sorry. I know. I thought about it a few times this week, and I don't know what my problem is. It's nothing against you. Nothing against your pain cave.
He's dangerously close to it becoming a thing like episode 400.
I've got a list right here. You know, I made a list last week of multiple ones I'm supposed to post. Uh-huh. I'm circling it now. Now it's circled.
Accent color, Todd, you asked the question. I'm the one to keep us on track. Seafoam green, we all accept. Accent color, you are going to go full gold. Chris King headsets, everything all the way across. Gold, gold, gold. It is the color of champions, and it is color of gold medal. Fun people like yourself. Gold, gold, gold. Do not listen to the haters and go gold with your accent colors on your seafoam green Rock Lobster cross bike.
Uh-huh.
I was going to say like orangish, some sort of orange was my accent color.
Orange is good.
So in the ballpark.
It's a complementary color to the seafoam.
Yeah.
No, I want clash.
Bring
clash
up the color wheel. Yeah, Tim, we know. We're aware.
Yeah.
Logan, did you have more to say about your orange?
No, I think that's the guy. You know, you pull up the Rock Lobster website and they've got the little lobster logo on the front that comes up on the seafoam bike is red. And that looks good too, but I feel like a little more orange, that'd be my pick. But as long as it's mostly that color. Because that's like same like the Bianchi. Like if you're a bike nerd and you see that Rock Lobster color from far away, you're like, ooh, there's Rock Lobster over there. Like, that's a cool bike. Anything will look good.
Right.
I got some kit ideas, though, and I think Tim might be on the same page as me, but we'll see.
Well, so let's focus on the Rock Lobster from Todd first.
Uh-huh.
Only about 100 of these bad boys are made a year. I mean, this is like, Todd, well done. Can we all agree that Rock Lobster at this point is probably the pinnacle besides vanilla? And I mean, I have a soft spot for Unguza out of Namibia with Dan Craven leading that crew. But Rock Lobster is kind of the king.
Well, here's the
of
deal.
These bikes, and it's aluminum, which is awesome.
Little guy, your orange color is a good choice. I like the complementary color wheel theory behind it. Tim, gold is way off the mark. It doesn't make any sense. Sounds like something you would put on a Panasonic track bike, not on something classy like a Rock Lobster.
True.
What you got to think about is not just the color. You got to think about how you're going to use this color. You got to think about how you're tying it in with all the parts. And when I look up the Time Special 12 limited edition pedals in aluminum, they come in black, they come in blue and they come in red. Mm. Now, if I have my red anodized pedals, they're not going to look good with gold accents everywhere, Tim. They're going to clash a little with the orange little guy. I'm going to say you got two options. It's blue or red. I kind of think the red would pop nicely, but the blue could look, you know, nice as a subtle darker tone with it. But I lean red in this, and I would get the Time Special 12s as well in red anodized to go along with it to really complete the look.
Now, on some of the pictures on the Rock Lobster site, they do have the purple anodized coloring, which looks all right. But Spencer, I do like the matching of the Time pedals, because we're in agreement that it needs to be Time pedals. This is the, we're already outfitting the bike. There is no opposition to this. We're already moving swell along. What kind of group are we putting on this?
I think this is where I think you agree with me, Tim. I think you should go with the Campy Gravel group.
E-car.
You gotta go with the E-car. Whether the new, whatever the E-car GT or the whatever, the other E-car, I think.
If yes, Todd, 100%. You need to get the Campy E-car. I don't know if there's a shop in Council Bluffs, Iowa that speaks Campy. Surely there's one over in Omaha. Just look for the Oracle, and he will be able to help you out. But this bike is going to look good.
He's the only guy.
Spencer, what would you put? Spencer, gun to your head, what group would you put on a bike, assuming disc brake?
You don't need to put a gun in my head. I'm putting Shimano Altegra DIT group on there because that's what goes on every single bike.
I know. Well, you're so much fun.
I like bang for buck.
I know you do. All right, next email comes to us from Stuart. Subject line, beyond measure. This surely is for you, little guy. A couple of chapters in, and I know why 16th is so special, and also because Matthew Vanderpool is apparently the shoe-in from Lawn San Remo. How about posting my pain cave? At least because Tim confused Van Dessel with Van Rysel, something something stroke. Also, my nose is much better. Thanks for asking. Also, give a shout-out to Amanda Nauman for having the patience to wait for Dave Sheik to finally buy a ring. Congratulations to both and Walter.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, congrats Amanda Nauman.
Very big congrats,
Engagement to Dave. But, little guy, beyond measure, what is this again? You have 10 seconds to tell me.
Remember when we had our first book, the Slow Ride Book Corner? It was a book I read about measurement.
Mm-hmm.
16 is a pretty common way to divide up the world. 16th of an inch, you know. You've been there. You ever divide, you know, you ever looked at a ruler before?
Nope.
Once or twice.
Once or twice. All right, this next email comes to us from Vic. Blue is the new brown. Bonjour, Le Slow Ride team. Here, an avid French listener on the pod, looking to bring your attention to the massive rebrand of our well-known sporting goods store, Decathlon. Our concern for sure is the most probable massive impact on cycling as we know it. Will we very soon see the elected and vivid Klein Blue, Klein, the painter, no relation to the departed bike brand, enter the Pro Peloton Haute Couture spring collection and finally deter all the other teams to use any other shade of blue in the future? A new fashion era is upon us. Those super boring beginnings of the season kit will certainly make a lot more sense as part of the French revolutionary master plan to bring much more fashion creation to our world. You are almost a delight to listen to, so please keep up the so-so work.
Jeez.
Merci, mille fois.
Lost in the
best regards,
there, I'm sure.
Vic. Vic, you crushed it. I'm sure you were talking about the all-new AG2R kit.
Mm-hmm.
Black shorts remain, but it is a starry night like Van Gogh wanted us to have.
Yeah.
Little guy, how do you feel about the French master Van Gogh painting the Decathlon kit?
It's pretty anonymous, I think. I didn't see it at Milan Sanremo at all. So did they change it already, or are they holding this out to the tour? Who knows?
I have been to the Van Gogh Museum in Paris, and I did not see this kit there. So, yeah, that's all I have to add.
Oh, how do we feel about the new AG2R kit? Let's take this a little bit serious, because I do appreciate Vic's email here. But what do you guys think of this email or of the kit? Is it an improvement over the placeholder bookmark that they had before?
Well, I can't actually remember the previous kit. So I guess in that sense, it must be better. Because all I can think of is last year's kit. So, yeah, the previous one must have been pretty boring. But this one doesn't strike me as that interesting. But maybe if I see it in a race, I'll think differently.
I kind of like it. Didn't see it at Milan-San Remo. Off the back. I did see Benoit Cousin-Froy, a.k.a. Harry Potter, for a little bit. And the infographic Eurosport had was, has won 16 professional races, 15 of them on French soil.
True French.
It's like,
there.
Whoa. I was like, whoa. Shots across the bow. But anyways, it was cool to see.
Wait, so he's, I kinda like the kid. He's really won only 16 races. And so the other one was Quebec. Didn't he win Quebec?
Oh.
See, he can only win in French. I'm going to do a little digging here. He can only win in French.
I'm pretty sure this is grounds for a Slow Ride Podcast live investigation on First Cycling. Who could get there first? Has he really won that many races is the first question. And have any of them been off French soil?
Yeah. Yeah, it's, well, I see 15 wins, and yes, all France, and then one in Quebec. So if they're not speaking French as the dominant language in the region, he's not winning the bike race. This is something to know when you go to the bookies, Timmy. Next time you're over there and you're going to the bookies, keep this in mind, because if that race is in France, Cousin-Froy is in good form.
he's the greatest homer. Is this the greatest homer stat of all time, that he only wins in French-speaking regions? What do you mean he doesn't win off of France, off of the French soil? Psst, it was in Quebec. Yeah. He won his only other race off of French soil. I mean, what are the crits that are in, is it Guadeloupe? Like the French departments that are in the Caribbean?
Yeah,
gonna clean up on the yeah, it's gonna be awesome. But anyways, Vic, thanks for the wonderful email. We got another one here.
I haven't really got too far into my research here, but I am looking. I recall that Decathlon was going to open a U.S. Location, so yeah. I don't know if they're gonna have the kits for sale there or not. It's supposed to be in San Francisco. This was news from end of 2023, so I don't know if this actually happened yet or not.
Haven't they opened one up there previously before too? And would your first store be in San Francisco is my question.
No. I mean, if you know Decathlon, anything about... Yeah, I don't think so.
like, that sounds like an executive that wanted to live in California for a year. I got this. Next email comes to us from friend of the pod, multi-time listener, platinum listener, Jesse Reince. Poge, has anybody heard if Pogacar has called his Scarponi Bridge attack for tomorrow? So this is a little bit in retrospect, but Pogacar not doing the Scarponi Bridge.
He tried.
He said he was going to attack on the Suppressa, but he didn't end up doing it. I mean, he
should have saved it for the Poggio.
Pog is a loyal listener to the pod and obviously knew what it would mean to us if he attacked from the Suppressa all the way to the Poggio. Ideally there'd be a group up the road that he could chase down, but it doesn't really matter. You can bridge by yourself.
Did you see the pictures of Pogue pre Milan San Remo with the sunglasses on, like walk into the sign in?
No.
Tell me
more.
He's just in his kit and he's just wearing these like Ray-Ban sunglasses. And it looks all pretty normal, but total Berzine 1994 vibes. Like, he looks so much like Evgeny Berzine, and it was just, it was funny. It gave me a little double take. Go watch your World Cycling Production videos. It's good stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go back and dig up that name from the archives. dust off the old Graham Watson book and see if I can find a picture in the index. This next one comes to us from Steven Milano Sanremo. Howdy, exciting finish. I heard Jasper mention that he got a fair sprint because Michael Matthews left the door open. Do you all think he would have left the door open for Matthews? So reversing it. So Jasper Philipson says Matthews gave him a fair sprint. Well, of course, because his glasses fell off. Do you think Philipson would have given a fair sprint to Matthews? Of course, is a pretty loaded question, right?
Yeah.
Philipson known for his straight sprints.
Is he?
Dead straight.
I mean, no, man, he had to do a lot of moving in that sprint. I don't know. Sure, he probably would have. Whatever. That's a
he
weird
seems fact. Like, it didn't seem like a horror. Like, Matthews came up and gave him a hug right after.
Yeah.
They, I mean, they were like, I don't think Matthews was, I think Matthews was disappointed he lost, but he was like, ah, whatever. You know, I'm going to go get my camper van.
I mean, Matthews didn't shut the door on him, but it's not like Philipson had to like weave around a lot to like get up on Matthews. And still, Matthews was close enough to the barriers that it was a little bit dicey. So, like, I mean, it was a totally fair sprint, but Philipson had to do a lot of maneuvering to get. There.
No, Matthews did a great job. He made it tough, made it difficult, but he didn't make it like
unfair,
unsportsmanlike.
Totally,
you know?
Totally. We haven't talked about this, but if you watch the overhead view, like when they showed the replay overhead of it, it's scary how much ground Pogue is making up toward the end. Yeah. Like Philipson is so fast, obviously, and Matthews is obviously super fast. But like, if that sprint had for whatever been like 100 meters longer, I think Pogue might have won it. Like, he was,
well, I mean,
if it weren't for the sunglasses jammed into his spokes, he might have.
If it wasn't for all these things, if it wasn't for the UCI actually shortening the length the way that they did for Tom Pidcock at the Mountain Bike World Championships when we all knew Sam Gaze was going to win, if there was really one more lap as there should have been, these things always happen, little guy. And it's
proof that they wanted
Jasper to win.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying more in terms of for the coming weeks of racing, the fact that Philipson been the best sprinter in the world for the last year or two. Michael Matthews, the best Michael Matthews in the world forever. You know, like the fact that Pogue was able to sprint with them is scary going into the Hilly Classics.
So as a side, one of the questions that came up, and I think that this, kind of came to it earlier when we were talking about Todd's bike with the aluminum rock lobster. Obviously, aluminum is the forgotten material of bikes, right? Like, it's kind of like, but you make a really cool bike that lasts a long time, that's super light and really, really cheap. What would it take? Would you buy a new aluminum bike at this point, little guy? And Spencer, like, would you go with a full aluminum road bike? Like, should they make a comeback? And if yes, why is it not the Slow Ride Podcast buying Klein name and bringing it back?
I totally would.
I think first off, I should address the offers on the table to whoever owns the rights to Klein. The Slow Ride Podcast will give you every single cent in our bank account for the rights to produce bikes with that name. Going forward, little guy, I think just said the obvious. He would definitely buy one. I also, the last new bike that I bought was a full aluminum frame from Squid that I ended up building up. So
it just said, and I read that like the Mozzie nameplate is going away. That Haro is going to be discontinuing that. So like you've got another, like we were all on Mozzies for a little while, like that. Like Mozzie was another like fantastic aluminum bikes that you could get. Like you don't need to have carbon everything all the time. And it was so great to see Todd going with the aluminum rock lobster. Yes. It's such an awesome underrated material. Next email comes to us. Ooh, this is going to be a good one, just based on the subject line alone. Cycling linguistics and other unimportant questions.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Matt, Tim, and Spencer, I've always had a thing for linguistics, and I can't unhear a verbal crutch used by pro cyclists. It's the use of yeah, as in, we pushed hard on the Suppressa, yeah, but we were not well coordinated, yeah, so it was a very disappointing day, yeah. I've also heard this as well, and the writer, Mr. 612, provides an example of this. The use of verbal crutches or filler is understandable when one is multilinguistic, but North American riders also liberally using yas in their conversation? I'm not the only one, yeah, who has made this observation. Thank you. I enjoy, yeah, your show, yeah. Regards. So that will be the start of this.
Yeah.
This sounds a little bit, there's no question here, I guess. I think, Mr. 612 is yelling at the clouds. This is the classic, Spencer, you may remember American superstar goalkeeper Casey Keller, who moved to the UK and adopted the English accent, even though he was from California and, picking it up every now and then. When I go back to Minnesota, I do pick up the a little bit, because I do like to think that I'm in Canada for a little while. When you're in Europe, picking up the yeah in the conversation that you often hear with non-English speakers finding time, does this bother you as much as it bothers Mr. 612?
As a podcaster, you become very aware of the importance of filler words and how to just sort of fill space without being annoying. And it's a little bit of an acquired skill. So I respect it and I understand where it's coming from. And it's just a thing that you can do to kind of fill up, 20 or 30 seconds of time without actually having to really say anything as you gather your thoughts, in your head. So I don't mind them at all. I think it's a great thing and totally useful.
Yeah. Doesn't bother me at all, but Mr. 612 does have a couple of other questions. The first one is, I love Schwamigan as much as you and attended in 90 and 91. Greg LeMond won those. It was much smaller than it is now, but the spectacle with LeMond departing the 90 race and the bright yellow helicopter after he was awarding the trophy. I would love to hear an interview with Gary, a.k.a. the Fat Man, or LeMond about those two races. Now, we do have a interview with Gary, the founder and promoter of Schwamigan, back in 2017 when we went up there and I won Schwamigan?
2018.
There is a interview where I believe Gary talks a little bit about LeMond winning. So you definitely want to check that out if you can find it in the archives. Now, Mr. 612, by the way, great name, Mr. 612. What exactly are your Minnesota bona fides beyond living in Minneapolis? Are you guys one of us or just interlopers?
Wow. Well, I mean, I live here still, so.
What high school did you go to, little guy?
Yeah, little guy. What high school?
Well, that's right. I went to Osseo and Maple Grove.
Of course you went to Osseo and Maple Grove. Western suburbs.
What about you before you start talking big?
St. Paul Como Park in the city, not a suburb.
In the wrong city. In the wrong city.
Yeah, not a cake eater, like little guy. And not in Minneapolis, like Spencer, who
sounds like probably I'm the only real one.
Probably went to the JV South Minneapolis High School.
No. I went to Washburn Miller. right there in the middle of the South Side. We ran out of paper many times during my high school career. I had to print things on the back of already used paper for our assignments. It was classy school there.
Were you kicked out of South Minneapolis High School?
I didn't live super close to Spencer's just down the block from Washburn.
Final email comes to us from friend of the pod, Graham Cargo Bibs. It has been about 10 years since Tim shamed me out of wearing my once-loved cargo shorts. They are the secret weapon of the dad world and provide much-needed storage for those long days at the parks or the hikes in the Florida wilderness. I think the last straw for Tim was my podium cargo shorts pictured that included the now-enshrined sleeveless Swift Cycles jersey. It was my greatest victory of my cyclocross career at the world famous Palm Bay Cyclocross course. I had pinched my rear derailleur DI2 cable with my GoPro mount and only had a functioning front derailleur for the entire race. This included negotiating the famous Palm Bay flyover with just a big and small front ring. This may have been peak me, Graham writes. All of these wonderful memories are tied to the last days of my cargo shorts. Things have come full circle, and the once shunned cargo short look has taken on a new life with cargo bibs. I have recently invested in the Endura Gravel cargo bibs and have found them to be the best thing since the double-decker bars. Gravel continues to bring all the great innovations to cycling. So, how long until the UCI allows these cargo shorts in the Pro Peloton, or is it an unfair advantage? You guys are getting better at with age. Keep up the great work, Graham. So first off, Graham, thank you for the email. And I dearly apologize for shaming you for all those years of the cargo shorts on the podium. It was just because I was dearly jealous that you won the race. And I was far behind you, knowing that the cargos and sandal look was going to happen on the podium that day.
Yeah. I do have a question, Tim. Now, he does mention there's about a decade ago that you shamed him out of the cargo shorts. Now,
I am a dad.
Yeah, he goes on to mention it's great for dadding. And now you being a dad, have you had to embrace the cargo shorts in your own personal life?
I am happy to report that I do not own any cargo shorts. However, I did buy a new pair of ripped-in jeans the other day. These are the mountain bike jort / jean company. And they do have a secret hidden zipper right above the knee on the right side for your phone. One could say it's a cargo, but it is not a protruding pocket. The zipper is on the hem. I'm just being brave enough in this safe company of my dear friends to share that it is cargo-esque, but it is not a cargo short pocket. So I am not full cargo dead. I just load everything into the front pocket. But here I am.
Can I get a hip pouch?
Yeah.
So yeah, pouches. Hip pouches are definitely rich, right?
The innovation does continue to come from the gravel scene. I gotta say, within bikes, I haven't really seen a new idea out of road cycling for quite some time. I mean, they come up with new time trial helmets, I guess, but I don't think anybody thinks those are good ideas. I've seen cargo bibs. I've seen cargo helmets. I've seen all kinds of cargo gear coming out of the gravel scene.
Because it's actually applicable to stuff you could use.
Yeah, and frame packs, all this stuff. I don't know how much stuff people need when they're doing gravel races. It seems excessive, but you can carry it.
Well, yeah, what do you get from road? You get jerseys that are tighter and have less useful pockets. You get brake cables that are hidden inside of a very small headset spacer that have to be like cut if you want to change anything on your bike. You get annoying things. You get faster, but you get annoying. Where gravel, you get options. You get a way to keep a sandwich with you, which is really what you need at the end of the day. You don't need to be a third of a mile per hour faster.
I think Graham asks a serious question, though, a sincere question. Maybe it's not about if the UCI will allow it, but how long until a road team starts incorporating cargo shorts? Because wouldn't this be the place for like the domestique bottle, like water bottle carrying challenge? Yeah, you got another two bottles you can.
I haven't been following the UCI rules as closely as I have in the past. Are cargo bib shorts currently outlawed, or has no one tried it?
I'm sure Mr. 612, who cares about the linguistics of listening, would be our person to investigate this.
Interesting.
Our rules expert.
Sure. We'll task Mr. 612, them with this.
New rules expert. I love it. I'm curious, but I think you could wear that. I think you can wear them.
And it, could say
to me, it seems like a no-brainer for whoever wants to carry the most water bottles at the Tour de France. And you don't need that Sportful vest. You may remember the Sportful vest, which actually like reduced the amount of bottles the domestiques can like stuff into their jerseys.
Yeah, it's kind of a cargo vest. Yeah.
You could put an extra two on your cargo bids. You could do a belt, a water bottle belt. Oh my God, this is... could stop recording the podcast. Like, we're going to go make millions here. This is our thing, guys.
You need to do like Sylvester Stallone in Rambo, like, with a couple of crossing like
bandoleros
belts across the chest.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Water bottles.
We figured it out. Time to retire. Oh, so good.
Just let them get baskets. Especially like, well, some of the domestiques are bigger guys, so they got taller head tubes, so they could really get a good, you know, got plenty of room to put a basket up there, you know? Like, Sylvain Diller's got a big basket on the bike. He's bringing bottles up to Philipson and MVDP.
You just drop it right over the little hooks on the handlebars. Just drop it right on there. Yeah. Cruise up. Now, come back to the car. Give it back. Good to go.
We're talking about cargo bibs, but the real question, little guy, on the edge, listeners across the globe are wondering. A few weeks ago, you went to the Minneapolis bike swap.
Uh-huh.
And you saw a diamond in the rough. You saw some $5 wheels. Sitting there, you were bragging. You're like, I spent $5 on these. All these other clowns walking around the swap meet.
He even mentioned another set that was like $40, and he was like, "What a sucker! I got him for five.
Yeah, I got him for five.
Yeah.
So, little guy, we need to know. It has been a while. Can you give us an update on the $5 wheels? Assuming you have actually used them and they are not littering your own van again in the garage.
They're not in the van. No, they look good. They're clean. I put some vintage rubber on them from my deep vintage mountain bike tire collection. And I proceeded to get about three blocks from the house, and I got a flat on the rear. It went flat instantly, and I knew that meant the valve. It probably was at the valve, which meant the rim strip had imploded. And sure enough, pulled that tire off. The rim strip had disintegrated. I walked home. And now I have to buy some new rim strips for them. So they will be like $20 wheels once I put two fresh rim strips in.
So you're still up on the $40 wheels.
I'm up. It had a cassette. So, I mean, I still think it was a good deal. They're clean wheels. It's just, I gotta actually do some stuff to them.
Are you disappointed that you didn't investigate the rim strip enough?
Like, you could have. Yes.
Yeah, is this a scale issue, little guy?
It looked okay, as a la Schwamigan 2018. The rim strip looked okay.
I'm starting to question if you know what a good rim strip looks like, little guy.
You're probably right about that. I've replaced rim strips on two or three other wheels this year out of my vast wheel collection. And I think I just hit that moment when every rim strip I own is actually 5 to 10 years old, and they all need to be done. It's not a big, it's like $7 for a rim strip, but you got to do all your wheels and you own 11 bikes, it starts getting pricey.
The bulk roll. You got to buy the shop.
Yeah, I guess so. I probably should. Anyway, put the other wheels back on it. The client's still rolling. Don't worry.
Bike swap zero, little guy zero. Right now.
Yeah, that person that was selling for $5 laughed as I walked away, and she's like, that rim strip's toast, sucker.
It's like a Subaru head gasket. It was going to go any moment.
Totally, yeah.
What are you guys talking
about? I don't know,
about?
Man. I just changed all the fluids on them. And
there's no way.
Never gave me
there's
any
no
problems.
Way. There's no way since 20 in 2017, Subaru is still having head gasket problems.
All right.
Absolutely.
So, listeners, write in with your Subaru head gasket problems. We know we have a lot. I mean, this is a bike podcast, so we've got to have at least 40 to 50% Subaru drivers out there. Write in with your head gasket tales of woe to scare Tim.
Yeah, we're like,
as his car comes in for the 90,000 mile maintenance.
We're like 40% Subarus, 35% no car families, and then 5%
there's a lot of
Alfa Romeos.
Yeah, 5% Alpha. I saw an Alpha at the co-op, but I didn't see our boy. So I don't know. I don't remember what color he's got.
What co-op are you going to with Alpha color. Romeos?
It was outside on the street.
That must be the non-union co-op.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah.
All right. Well, gentlemen, it has been fun as always on the Slow Ride Podcast in episode 476. We did get reached out to us. I believe it was Dr. Codine in Ohio. Apologies if I was wrong, but did point out on Twitter, or maybe it was Instagram, that if we time this correctly, episode 500 could be coming out during the Japan Cup. So the question is, are we in Japan for episode 500? So if you want us to be in Japan for episode 500, you're going to have to contribute to the Slow Ride Podcast fund.
Please.
Do you think we could get a press pass
for the Certainly.
Japan Cup?
Yeah.
They're not going to fly us there, though.
Yeah, probably not. All right, well, as always, you can email us at theslowridepodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter, where Little Guy promises to put up all of your pain cave photos at theslowridepod. And as always, this is Tim in the lovely and only city beautiful Orlando, Florida.
This is Matt in the city beautiful Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And this has been Spencer in the city, beautiful Holyoke, Massachusetts, blessed by Tim recently, reminding you to always wave at all your fellow cyclists you see out on the road.
The Slow Ride Podcast. Bikes, advice, and rumors straight from the source. TheSlowRidePodcast.com and on Twitter at TheSlowRidePod.
There's an elegance to bike racing. For all its technology and engineering, it's a simple question of physics. How do you move a body through space as quickly and efficiently as possible? When the rider and the machine work as one, it's almost as if the solid world has melted away, and all that remains is the spirit, the pure, raw, and unfiltered soul of sport. Life is measured in many units, miles, kilometers, kilos, and pounds. But we measure it one corner at a time. We've entered the golden age of crit racing, the most exciting spectator event in sport, where all of human drama plays out before us on our city streets. On this show, we bring you the news of the day and take you inside the personalities of the teams and riders and right up to the gates of the premier events in the world. Welcome to Criterium Nation.